County Prevention Coalition podcast, dedicated to bringing educational information to prevent substance abuse and help individuals achieve a healthy well-being.
Hello, my name is Tina Bradley, and you're listening to the Wood County Prevention Coalition podcast. I'm the coordinator for the Wood County Prevention Coalition in Wood County, Ohio. And today we have Kyle Clark and Angie Patchen from the Wood County Educational Service Center's Prevention Education Management Team with us, as well as Greg Van Voorhis. He's our tech guru today. But we're going to be discussing new developments in Wood County's prevention education curricula. And for those who don't know us yet, I'll go ahead and share with you the Wood County Prevention Coalition's mission. We are a coalition of compassionate community members working together to coordinate high-quality programs for the prevention of youth substance abuse in Wood County, Ohio. And our vision is helping youth be drug-free, responsible, and productive citizens. Our tagline is Uniting for a Drug-Free Wood County since 2004. So folks, I'm going to shoot it your way. Share with us what the latest developments are in prevention education and how those changes may have come about.
Thanks, Tina, for having us in today. Appreciate it. You're talking about any changes in the prevention world, prevention education, and there have been several over the past few years on how we do things and the focus we put on things. But probably the biggest change most recently was last spring with House Bill 123. And that particular bill, it outlined a few different things that schools are mandated now to do on a yearly basis. One of them is suicide prevention education and safety and violence related to bullying and a few things like that. But I'm going to turn that over to Angie, and she can explain a little bit more about what the suicide prevention looks like and what we've done here in the office to provide service to our districts.
Yeah, the Wood County Adamus Board asked us to work with Children's Resource Center and Unison to create the Resiliency Project, addressing suicide prevention in schools. So we're all looking at programs that we can provide to youth. They're providing assistance to teachers as well to give them some training on self-care and that kind of thing. They're using the Signs of Suicide program. We chose to use Lifelines and Teen Mental Health First Aid with the schools that we work with, and to offer that. They can choose some of these other programs as well. We can do all of them. They can do none of them for right now. This actually goes into place, I believe, the 23-24 school year is when it becomes effective and they have to do it. But we're working with them now to start offering suicide prevention training to students in 5th through 12th grade. We have, Lifelines is a four-session curriculum in 5th through 10th grade. And then in 11th and 12th, that's only two sessions, kind of planning for the future and what does that look like. Teen Mental Health First Aid is for 10th through 12th graders, and it's six sessions long. Both of them have been received really well by the districts. Again, we're starting to use those in many different grade levels at many different schools. We also had our staff trained in something called Safe Dates, which is a relationship violence prevention program. And again, that's been pretty well received. So those are some of the changes that we've implemented.
I know there was a program too, and I'm not sure if it's being implemented or being considered, but Catch My Breath, was that one of the new additions to...
Catch My Breath has some evidence-based data behind it that the federal government has put out through, I'm not sure if it's through SAMHSA or CDC, but one of those agencies, and it's free of charge, and it's a program that we can utilize. I think it's made up of four or five lessons, so it's relatively a brief prevention education program that we can use to help educate students on vaping, and we have used that and are using it specifically on a program that we've just developed with a Saturday school. So we've been providing trainings that way. to kids.
Yeah, that will help us meet the House Bill 110 that went into effect on September 30th of this year. That requires schools to address the content on harmful effects of and legal restrictions of electronic smoking devices. So that's something that they now have to talk about, and we will help them do that.
And, of course, the terminology changes all the time. We're talking about vaping. We're talking about e-cigarettes. The government refers to it, and E is electronic, so the electronic cigarettes. Kids know it in different terms. They call it Juul, whether they're using that particular brand or not. They call it Juuling or whatever the most common term is for them. And then, of course, there's all different kinds. There's big pods and little skinny things that look like cigarettes, and there's vaping devices that you can get in any number of forms. The drawstring on a hoodie, we've found vaping device there. Watches can be hiding vaping devices. Just you name it, and the technology seems to be out there.
How about smokeless tobacco? Where does that fit in? Is that one of those interchangeable terms for vaping as well, or is that totally different?
Smokeless tobacco has always been referred to as exactly what it says, smokeless. It's whatever tobacco they can put between her gum and cheeks or chewing or whatever that might look like for them. But that's been going on forever, chewing tobacco and snuff, smokeless tobaccos. But in Wood County, both smoking a cigarette and smokeless tobacco has been decreasing at large rates. And I think that's due to the education that we've put out there, the trainings that we've had. I think kids are really realizing the harmful effects of that, and the availability is still there. So we know that prevention seems to be working because they have access to it, but they're not using it. And they're thinking that replacing cigarettes and smokeless tobacco with a vaping device, they think, is safer. We're seeing data that doesn't indicate that, although admittedly there are less harmful chemicals in a vape device, but still cancer-causing agents are there.
This is probably one many people already know, but perhaps they don't. What's the correlation between the work of the prevention education department and the Wood County Prevention Coalition and or our drug-free communities grant?
Well, the biggest difference with drug-free communities, it's exactly what it says, community. With the programming that we offer through the Adamus Board, it's basically school-age youth. So we're looking at the ESC with prevention education being the K-12, pre-K-12 educational process. And then I have always worked, as you know, Tina, through all the work that we've been doing, the drug-free community helps draw the entire county together. Basically now we have a program, Birth to Death, and we can address, with some of our same programming, we can go out with your help and get out into the community and talk to adults, talk to college-age youth, you name it. The whole thing just expands our program and enriches it.
Definitely. And I think even some of the curriculum, like the Parent Project, you know, probably has a dual role, I would say.
Parent Project has a dual enrollment. In fact, I'll let Greg talk about that for just a minute if he would like to, because he's one of our instructors with the Parent Project. It's right on his home turf. But yes, there is a youth component and an adult component.
Sure. We're having session 9 tonight out of 10.
And, cool.
So we're elbows deep.
Sometimes we have enough youth that we can run the youth component. We do invite it, but how are we this year? How are we looking? Do we have a youth component as well as the adults? Are they bringing everybody in?
We don't have the youth component, and the big problem with that is COVID right now, because we didn't know what it was going to do. It seemed to be making a resurgence right around the time with the Delta variant. We weren't sure if it was going to cause more problems, so we did everything online for the second time. We did it in the spring, and then we did it online again this fall. So we did it online, which meant that we only had enough people to do the adult component, which is, and both of them, the teens and the parents come into the building together, but then they get separated. And the parents don't know I guess, for lack of a better word, what the kids are learning, and the kids intentionally don't know what the parents are learning, because we don't want to teach them our skills. We spend 10 weeks talking about trauma and why kids are kids and why they act the way they do and how to deal with youth who challenge us more than typical teenage youth normally do. There are the easy teens and then there are the challenging teens. But this class is intended for the challenging teens, the parents of the challenging teens. However, all of these lessons can be applied to anybody. I mean, I've applied these to my middle child since he was 3 years old. You just have to adjust them accordingly. So, yeah, we talk about all of those things, what to do if they run away, threaten to run away, threaten suicide. We talk about the suicide aspect of it. All of the difficult discussions, we have them. And I've been teaching this since 2010, and there hasn't been a year that at least one set of parents hasn't cried in the classroom because of something that they're dealing with. That this, oh, I wish I had this class so many years ago. I could have dealt with this before it happened. We hear that a lot. And I'm anxious to get these into the classrooms again, in an in-person setting, because we have the youth component that is really valuable for it. And that is a program called the Y-Tri program. And some of the districts, some of our prevention specialists offer that in the districts. We do offer that in the juvenile detention center. A few Wood County youth are receiving this, but the problem with that is that our JDC program is 26 or 27 weeks long, and the Y-Tri program is only 10 weeks long. So if a kid, if a youth comes in at lesson number 9 and is only there for 6 weeks, they're not getting all of the Y-Tri. They're getting 2 lessons of the Y-Tri plus a bunch of other stuff, and then we're getting back to the beginning of Y-Tri, which is where they need to be. We're anxious to get these kids into this Y-Tri program again. And the whole point of Y-Tri is to help them look at how they view themselves, how other people see them, how they approach life. And a lot of these kids have struggled with something. We all struggle with something, right? But a lot of these kids lash out because they're struggling with something specific. And at times, once it gets bad enough, they just want to kind of give up, okay? And I'm not necessarily talking about suicide. I'm just talking about give up. You know, the grades are bad, so why do I even bother trying? Why do I even bother going to school? I'll just skip. I'll go do what I want to do. I'll sit and play video games all night. It doesn't matter anymore. And that's the whole point of the Y-Tri program. Why should I try? Why should I make an effort? And that's what it's showing them, that it matters, that they matter, that making the effort matters, that there is a payoff at the end. And this is why we do it, and this is how we need to make that effort. So
I think the other thing, Greg, about that program that I like is that it also encourages us as adults, as educators, to use and utilize social media and up-to-date current video clips of things that we can find out there that really relate to the kids.
It does.
It draws them in.
Yeah. Throughout that curriculum, it suggests multiple examples, and they're constantly updating it and encouraging us to use our own examples that we find just as we're out in life, out in the wild, finding things, you know.
And no doubt making a huge impact in our community, and will make a continued impact, because what happens today informs what happens tomorrow.
Very much. And all of the feedback that we've received from this, I can't remember how many years we've been doing this, that we've offered the Y-Tri program. It's been at least 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
All of the feedback on that has been fantastic.
That's so excellent. That's
but the
excellent.
What I like about Parent Project, really, too, is that it gives parents good parenting skill suggestions. It also gives them the background in human growth and development. I mean, all of us have gone through stages of life, and in those stages, there are certain predictors that we can say are going to happen. At some point, kids will rebel and challenge our authority. Well, we know that's in those early teenage and middle teenage years. We know that, you know, we've all heard of the terrible twos, when a child is 2 years old, and it's all about me, and me, 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 me. So getting a good general understanding of that helps parents select the parenting skills they need and the methods to go through that. At the same time, the student component is giving them a general background of the harmful effects of drugs and alcohol and helping them to give them the skills to make wise choices.
Well, just a moment ago, I made a comment about what happens today informs tomorrow. We got some news, Kyle, recently from CATCA regarding something that will inform our future at some point, hopefully. You want to kind of talk about that?
Drug-free community grant in and of itself requires our director and coordinator and coalition to go through a three-week training called the Coalition Academy. And we finished that, and we have gone through those 3 weeks of training. We did so and developed some very highly productive tools that we can use to help continue to build our coalition. And the most recent document that we made was the sustainability plan, which was just approved here about a week ago. And so it looks like we're going to be heading towards a ceremony at the National Forum this year, held in February, of graduating. And I think we're on good track there, Tina, thanks to your efforts of keeping me on track throughout those 3 weeks. You did an excellent job helping to do that.
It was a team effort, no doubt.
But the sustainability plan was our most recent tool, and I'm not sure if we've talked much about that with people, but the idea is that when the grant goes away, which it will expire in December of 25, when that goes away, our goal is to be able to continue operating our DFC and give us the opportunity along the way to find ways to fund that program, either absorb or find additional funders to help us continue this effort. And like I said, the DFC enhances and enriches and expands the prevention programming that we do in schools. So it's only to our advantage to find a way to do that. There's going to be, ongoing personnel costs. Some of the things that we do in drug-free community is compliance checks with bars and with convenience stores, grocery stores that sell alcohol and tobacco. We actually hire and contract with the police departments and sheriff's office to randomly throughout the year select some places to go in and see if people will sell to them. One of the punishments, or if you want to call it a punishment, is for that agency then to go through seller server training is what we call it. And so there's a cost involved with that, whether we hire that out or we can do it ourselves. So, and there's continual travel in and around the state as we work with other agencies. And so that's kind of our goal. And we're going to do that by talking to other funding possibilities, whether it's private business or industry that might want to help contribute. Because let's face it, adults who are using and abusing drugs, the better off our workforce is. So it's to their advantage to help see this need and to have some of this education. We're also looking at continued grants, trying to find the next grant that's out there. And Tina, you've done an excellent job. We've already brought in a couple since you've been here, or one anyway, I think, since you've been here.
Applied for several.
We've applied.
Yes.
But you helped us to finish up one.
Yes.
We were working with one before, previously. And so these are all different ways of finding additional resources to help us continue moving forward. And of course, the help of the grant, which has provided a lot of training for all of our staff, that training is still there. So we can still offer those programs even after the funding dries up, because we have staff who are trained to continue to implement it. So it comes from all sides.
And for many years to come.
And for many years to
come. And just a few updates, since we are talking about the Drug-Free Communities grant. We do now have an availability of brochures, and we're going to have a supply of tobacco prevention child activity books. We've also got vaping posters. So if you're in Wood County, Ohio, and have a need for any of the things I just mentioned, please get in touch with me. I'm at Tina Bradley. My email address is tbradley@wcesc.com. Wood County Ohio.org. And if you are in Wood County, Ohio, I welcome you to reach out. We have a healthy supply of all of the things I just mentioned, and we're glad to provide those to you. Right now, unless anyone has anything else for the good of the order, our time is drawn to a close. And in the meantime, visit us at Facebook. That's WCP Coalition. Twitter is Wood CP Coalition. And we are online with our newly revamped website. It's www.wcprevention.org. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast is intended for educational purposes only. Those views expressed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the Wood County Educational Service Center or the Wood County Prevention Coalition.